WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around to get updates on the latest stories happening in the Chicago area and a preview of the upcoming Illinois primary elections later in this episode. But first, before the days of Twitter and the nonstop push alerts from your news apps, there was a place where Chicagoans could get their breaking news fast. The City News Bureau was where journalists learned the ropes with zero room for error.
As reporters, we were all young, fresh, right out of college in our early 20s, and we got thrown into the deep water from jump, covering everything, crime, politics, fires.
That intensity left a mark on the people who passed through. In a new book called Sirens in the Loop, a history of the City News Bureau of Chicago, tells their stories firsthand. At the table, James Elsner, author of Sirens in the Loop and a City News Bureau alum. Rowana Hussein, columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, who worked at the Bureau in the 90s. And Abdon Palish, who's a former reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times and City News Bureau. He's currently the communications director for the Illinois Comptroller. Jim kicked off the conversation with the origin story of the new book.
Sirens in the Loop, a history of the City News Bureau of Chicago. The title, which was given, suggested to me by Wayne Klatt, one of our longtime editors at the Bureau, refers to the practice that as soon as we heard sirens anywhere in the area of the City News Bureau, we had to send out a bulletin to all of our clients. Our clients were the daily newspapers, the radio and TV stations, and we say sirens in the loop. And that meant action was beginning.
Things were about to stir up.
The book was really written by the people who worked at City News Bureau. Paul Zimbrakis, who's the co-author of this, was our longtime legendary editor of the City News Bureau. Mm-hmm. He's a mentor to both Romana and to Abdon and myself. And
your former boss people. And friend, right?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. We just lived a few blocks away. And from each other. Paul passed away in 2022, and he had done a lot of work on this book. So when he passed away, I basically inherited three of those big Rubbermaid plastic boxes full of newspaper clippings, emails, photographs, and drafts of stories. And that's what I worked from. So I was more of an editor, organizer, and editor, as was Paul. Before me.
So before we hear from the others, I mean, what was it like to pick up where Paul left off?
It took me a while to get going. My wife went out of town for a week with her sisters, and I just kind of used the entire living room to pull stuff out, sit it down, find the proper pile to put it in. That's where it sat for about a week until she came home. So and that became my table of contents and pretty much stuck with that same organization.
I see. Throughout. Well, Romana and Abdon, tell me, when did you all work at the City News Bureau? Romana?
I was there from 1996 to 2000.
Okay, so 4 years,
yep.
Roughly. Okay, Abdon?
I was there 87 to 89.
87 to 89. What was the atmosphere like back then?
It was great, wild.
It was great and wild. Sounds like newsrooms today.
It really was brutal. City News was a brutal boot camp to learn the gritty journalism. We'd already done journalism school and we had our book learning, but to actually be on the battlefield you know, in between editors. That you, the idea was to make you so scared to go back to the editor without every fact that you're willing to go back to that gruff sergeant who just bawled you out for asking him a second or third time, go back a fourth time, which sort of trains you to do it right the first time, organize your thoughts, get all your questions in when you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ramona, what was it like in 1996?
It was pretty crazy. I mean, I am a child of immigrants. I did not know any reporters, and my parents are like, oh, what are you, you know, I just went to grad school after undergrad, and I was like, well, I had heard about City News, and then a friend started working there, and she told me it was a great place to work. And I remember in college, one of my professors, his daughter came to talk about City News, and she talked about working the overnight shift. And I'm like, I have to work overnight? And I did do that. And then,
early career shock.
Yeah, you don't have weekends off. But once I started, it was great. I mean, I learned so much. You learn the basics, and I think that's, you know, I think, you know, there was this pre-internet. So we had to knock on doors, you know, when we had to look up addresses if there was like a tragedy. We had reverse yellow pages. So we would call people, and we had cell phones were just starting off then, yes. But they were really expensive and they looked like
and
bricks.
Really big.
Yes, they were like bricks. And so we had an 800 number. So I remember like going and I would be calling on phones, and I was really naive about some of the places I was at. And one time these officers saw me using a phone. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm calling my desk. And I told them I work for City News. And they're like, you know, this phone is used by drug dealers, right? Like, be careful. So it was definitely a great learning experience. Right. Everything I learned at City News, I still have in the back of my mind today. I learned how to parallel park.
Yeah,
working for City News, because I didn't know how to do that before. But then you'd get sent all over the place.
Right.
And if you didn't know how to parallel park, you know, so that's how I learned. I learned a lot.
And Jim, what years did you work there?
I was there from 1970 to 1972.
So you've got the experience of the 70s. Yeah. What was it like then?
Well, Ramona described it very well. The addition I would say is that we ran around with a lot of dimes and then quarters in our pockets, because you always had to find payphones, if any of us remember payphones. You know, there was a couple stories which I brought with me. They're very short, if I could kind of...
Sure.
Read from what people said. Seamus Toomey, who worked there in the late 90s, you may have known Seamus.
Seamus runs
Herald.
Block Club, yeah.
And he said, what I remember most are the nightmares and pre-dawn panic attacks during my first several weeks on the job. They didn't come from fear of covering the endless stream of shootings, stabbings, and beatings. The nightmares came from the fear of not adequately covering the mayhem of my watch and feeling the unspoken wrath of the city editor, Paul Zimbrakis, the next morning.
Yep.
The pressure and tensions of getting beat by my competitors was so intense that I hardly ate. One fellow reporter reportedly threw up every morning during his first month.
Wow.
Not eating, of course, was a great way to stretch our modest weekly paychecks.
Yeah, and we asked some folks for some of those same recollections. The City News Bureau was known for breaking news, so I want to play now what Maureen O'Donnell, who's a former Sun-Times obituary writer, and she worked for the Bureau between 1980 and 1983. This is her sharing quite the scoop.
One Saturday night, I answered the phone at City News, and it turned out to be the mayor of Chicago, Jane Byrne, calling to announce to City News exclusively that she and her husband were going to move into the Cabrini Green public housing project, which at that time was notorious for gang crime and violence.
I'm really not afraid over there at all. And I think what you have to prove is that you don't have to be afraid. And I'd like to stimulate that with the people that live there.
It sounded like a hoax, but Mayor Byrne said they hoped their presence at Cabrini would lead to a drop in crime.
The neighbors know at some point the mayor plans to move out of here, security and all. She was asked when that will be.
When I think people think they can look out a window and not get shot.
We broke the story. City News sent out a bulletin on the mayor's plan. And soon we were getting calls from newspapers as far away as London who wanted to use our quotes.
What comes to mind for you, Abden, hearing that?
that's what you're doing. It was, you know, City News was a cooperative of all the newspapers that started out as, how many, Jim?
There were 12 at the beginning.
12 at the beginning.
Yeah, 1890.
It's down to the Trib and the Sun-Times now, most of our time.
Mm-hmm.
But all the, you know, you guys, the radio stations and everyone else also relied upon our copies. So we would often be the first one to report something. There was a call of sirens in the loop, and John Holden, I was there at the time, but he got the call, and he saw the ambulance come into City Hall and it's going up to the fifth floor, and he called it in, and that was the first bit of news that Mayor Harold Washington had passed.
Wow.
So these scoops often started with city news.
Yeah, and the Bureau was the starting point, Jim, for several famous journalists. What was it, you think, that turned beginners into professionals?
Well, they learned those basics that Abden and Romano were talking about.
Throwing folks into the deep end, is that the trick?
Absolutely. You either sank or swam. Those who really liked the business stayed on, and they found a love of journalism, and they became journalists throughout not only the country but the world. Those who didn't like the business, they went someplace else. And I do have one chapter that's entitled City News Wasn't for Everybody.
Yeah. Do training grounds like the Bureau exist anymore, Romana?
I don't think they do, at least not in Chicago and not in the form that it was at City News. And I kind of wish they still had that because I think it was a great, great training ground. I mean, I went to Northwestern, which is supposed to be like, it is a great grad program, but I didn't learn as much as I did until I went to City News because you really had to learn, you know, who people were and who the movers and shakers were. And I'm from the Chicago area, and I realized I didn't know half of what is out there in the city. I didn't know about neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about certain politicians. I remember, you know, Rod Blagojevich, the former governor, disgraced governor. He was a state rep, I believe, then. And then I remember I could not pronounce his name. And I remember calling in, and I was terrified because I didn't know how to say his name. And I didn't know I was talking to the rewrite, and I kept mispronouncing it. And I was so scared. And it just made you really learn to ask the right questions and just learn about it just made you learn so quick. And I thought it was a great experience. And I wish there was more places like that.
Now, I want to know the biggest lesson you think that you learned in your time there. Jim, I'm looking at you first.
When we were chatting in the other room, I said to Abden and Rana, who's the first person that's going to utilize our mantra, which is, if your mother tells you she loves you, check it out. And that speaks to the accuracy that we were required to follow and to make sure
you
that
you still had to verify. You still had to fact check. Your mom.
don't assume anything. And if your mom tells you she loves you, check it out.
I love that. Abden?
And that is, you know, it's get it right. Journalism is often the first draft of history, and there's often things are wrong. And especially when you're covering a lot of cop news as we did, the first reports aren't always right and they have to be updated. It's embarrassing to have to correct something you've put out or to get chewed out by Paul Zimbrakis or some of the other editors there. And you learned to get it right the first time. All three of us here can spell Blagojevich.
Yep.
Because you learn, these are just skills and traits that they drilled into you.
Absolutely. I want to play another voice memo from a City News Bureau alum. This is one from Sun-Times architecture columnist Lee Bay.
I remember fellow City News reporter Bill Lund teaching me how to speak in a Chicago accent so I could get better info on the phone from cops. Now, I was born in Chicago, but I'm Black, and Black people typically don't get that accent. So I tried it out with the next call. Hey, City News here. You got anything on that homicide on Garfield Boulevard? And you know what? It worked. And I would still do it on occasion when I still had to work crime. City News was a great place. I still miss it.
Yeah, I love how it brings back fond memories for you all, Romana.
Yeah, and you know, Seamus Toomey was mentioned, Maureen O'Donnell, Lee Bay, and I know all those. I worked with Seamus. And so, you know, you kind of have these longstanding ties. Once you become friends with someone or the people that you worked with at City News, it's kind of like a war. I mean, I don't want to compare it to war, but it's kind of like you're all in it together. And, you know, I still hang out with my friends that I had at City News just a couple of weeks ago. There's a couple of women that I know, and some of them are still in the business, some aren't, but we try to get together.
I love that. And lasting friendships.
Lasting friendships, because you just went through so much together. You end up becoming really good friends. So even when you meet someone that worked at City News, like when you mention it, the stories just start pouring out, and they're always hilarious sometimes. And some of them are really sad because you did cover a lot of things that were very tragic, but yeah, there was a lot of humor. There's a lot of humor there too.
Yeah. Lee highlighting there, of course, the difference between the Black Chicago accent and the white Chicago accent. Yes.
I mean, that's a thing. I totally, and I'm like South Asian, and when you kind of hang out and wait for a story to happen, you'd get sent out to a police station and you'd just kind of hang out at a police station. I think I was like the first South Asian a lot of police officers saw. Like, I wasn't the Irish kid or the Polish kid, and they'd be like, oh, what are you? You know? And so, yeah, it's really interesting because, people would just learn about each other. I learned a lot about, the Southside Irish. I grew up in a mostly Jewish neighborhood in the suburbs, in the North Side. And I was like, I did not know this side existed. So it was pretty interesting.
Well, interestingly, you write, Jim, that your co-author, Paul, wanted Sirens in the Loop to be a text for journalism students, but you don't see it that way.
No, I
why
think,
not?
I think the world of journalism has moved so far past what City News was.
I'd say some of the young journalists today could learn from
the
deep end dives just get that grit.
Without a doubt. I do think some journalism professors are going to ask their students to read it for the history that's there. But it's primarily a history of Chicago and a history of journalism in Chicago, and this perhaps the Chicago style of journalism.
Yeah, you were surprised too of how hard Paul worked to keep the Bureau open back in 1999 when it almost closed. Abden, I'm curious, why do you think he did that? This place, as we've pointed out, was known for long hours and low pay. You agreed with me that it was brutal.
Oh, hell yeah. I started at $185 a week in 87, and I don't know how I paid the bills.
Sorry, one more time?
$185 a week. In 87, which, do the math, I could have qualified for food stamps. you had asked before, is there any other place like City News? And there really isn't. I mean, we've got some great new startups. You know, Seamus's Black Club, I'm sure they get a lot of thrown in the deep end. But I doubt that he trains his editors to be as harsh as it was at City. The ethos there was, hey, you know, on day one, you got to be, you know, as harsh on the new guy that started, you know, like I was trained my first day, Monica Davey, and then it was Janann Hanna, and they'd only been there like a week or two before me, but they were already at that point, you know, they'd had the bruises, and then now they're instilling them on me to help me to survive. So it was such a one-of-a-kind experience that I really do feel bad for the new journalists starting out that, I, you know, they say, where should we start? And I'd love to be, if there was a City News here, I'd tell them to start there. It's great training. And that's why Paul wanted to keep it going, because it was such a great, like I said, Irmana, I went to Northwestern undergrad. She did the graduate school there. I learned great stuff there and writing.
But it wasn't until you were on the job at the City News Bureau. I'll ask you what I asked Irmana earlier, Abden. I mean, do training grounds like this still exist today?
I've never heard of something exactly like City News. I really think it was a great one of a kind, and it wasn't like designed. It just sort of happened out of necessity as a deal between these, you know, different newspapers that cover night cops, and it evolved into a great training ground. So it wasn't like somebody had a great idea, let's do it. It just sort of happened. I hope there are places. I hope they spring up. I go back and talk to journalism classes periodically, and I say, okay, you guys, no pressure, but you got to find a way to fund journalism because the old sources don't work. I hope they come up with something like City News.
Some of our standards now might be slipping, right? And we should probably be more like how things were in the past. What would you say is your most memorable story from the Bureau, Jim?
Well,
I know you've got plenty. But if you had to pick one.
I covered the criminal courts building on 26th Street in the end of 1970, and there was quite a dramatic trial that went on. It was the murder of a Chicago police detective by street gang members. Mm-hmm. And every day, that was another news story. Several times during the day, the things that occurred. It was poorly prosecuted case, and there was just a lot of dynamics that went on. So that was probably the story that sticks in my mind.
Yeah. Most. And hearing from all the other folks here, all the other alum, Ramana, I mean, what does that bring back for you? Because I feel like they're almost maybe validating some of the thoughts you might have had over the years about what that time was really
I
like.
Yeah, I mean, just like covering, you know, I just remember there's like a lot of tragedies when I was at City News. There was a rape of a little girl and then there was Lenard Clark that brought up a lot of like, you know, racial, you know, issues in Chicago. And it just like, you know, you just saw like it all playing out. And then, you know, when I worked at City Hall, I used to cover City Hall and education. And that was very eye-opening to me, just seeing the way politics unfurled in the city. And this is when Mayor Richard M. Daley was in charge. And I just learned so much. And, you know, just listening to the other reporters talk about the Harold Washington days, because I was a kid when Harold Washington was mayor, and I didn't know about a lot of the council wars. I didn't know about the racial undertones. So I really learned a lot about the city where I was born, just working at City News.
Yeah. Well, the new book is called Sirens in the Loop, A History of the City News Bureau of Chicago. And co-author Jim Elsner is a former alum of the City News Bureau, and Ramana Hussein, currently with the Sun-Times, and Abdon Palish, who's currently with the Illinois Comptroller. Susana Mendoza, thank you all for sharing your stories with us.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Thank you, Sasha.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Okay, now it's time to get into the top local stories of the day. At the table to help me break them down was Dave McKinney, WBEZ politics editor, and Claire Lane, WBEZ morning edition anchor. Charges were dropped against several people who protested at the ICE facility in Broadview last fall. Claire had the details.
So this was folks taking part in a clergy-led protest outside of Broadview back in November. Faith members, as we know, were very present throughout Operation Midway Blitz, especially outside of Broadview.
Yes.
And they had set out to provide some religious counseling to detainees at the facility, which is not new. I mean, they'd been doing that for a decade. You covered that on your show.
Mm-hmm.
But they were denied entrance to the building on this specific day. A scuffle ended up breaking out. Multiple people were injured during this confrontation, including four police officers. And local law enforcement ended up arresting 21 people.
Wow. Yeah, and the charges were brought on by the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. So, I mean, what did it say about why the charges are being dropped now?
So the statement that was released regarding this from the Cook County State's Attorney's Office says, quote, although sufficient evidence exists to support this prosecution, considering the totality of the circumstances, we are declining to proceed. So that's that.
Okay. Well, at those demonstrations, protesters were using their cell phones, you'll recall, to record all of the tactics from law enforcement used against them. I want to turn to another story in that same vein. Now Chicagoans could actually be using their cell phones to record parking violations, Claire?
When in doubt, pull out your phone.
What?
When it comes to ICE activity and parking violations, apparently the City Council's Committee on Pedestrian and Traffic Safety just approved a revised ordinance that would essentially allow that to happen. You to record an instance of running a red light or not running a red light or, you know, some offender bender. Committee Chair, this is Alderman Daniel Espada, says the revised revised ordinance will lead to a greater safety for all Chicagoans. The ordinance will now go to the full city council for a vote.
And business groups are concerned about this?
Right. So this comes after concerned business groups stalled the ordinance 3 months ago. They said they were concerned, saying that it would punish commercial delivery drivers, also, you know, repair vehicles, okay, maybe a plumber stopping by to do some work, and struggle to find legitimate loading zones.
Well, Dave, let's pivot here, because today we are marking a special anniversary. Well, we're marking 5 weeks until Illinois primary day. I don't know how much of an anniversary that is, but you know, early and mail-in voting, we know that that's already begun. But tell us about the top three races that we're watching here.
Well, I mean, it's hard to believe. We are in the thick of campaign season right now. It's really coming to a head, and there are a lot of people in the political world who are not getting any sleep now between, you know, where we're at now on March 17th. But I would say the three races we're watching are the very robust fight for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate to succeed Dick Durbin. The Illinois Republican gubernatorial primary is a big one as well, to see who will go up against J.B. Pritzker for that election fight in November. And then, you know, my math here, I know you said three, but I'm going to add four more to the list. And those are open congressional primaries that we have. It's a once-in-a-generation situation where we have, you know, a real changing of the guard among the state congressional delegation. So we have four open congressional seats that bear watching.
Yeah. Two of the leading Democratic candidates are leaving their congressional seats to run for Senate. I mean, what does this open up? I mean, and who's running?
Well, in the congressional primary, we have the open seats of Robin Kelly, Raja Krishnamoorthy, Jan Schakowsky, and who am I forgetting here? This is my moment here.
Either way.
Well, we've got like a bunch of people here, dozens of candidates in these four primaries here, and it's the real challenge these folks have is setting themselves apart. And for us, keeping track and vetting these people.
Right. Well, in that race to replace Dick Durbin, we know that Governor Pritzker recently pumped $5 million into the race, backing Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. What do you think about that?
Well, first off, my frail 60-something brain, Danny Davis, that was
there
the other open seat. Ding, ding, ding. Sorry.
Thank you.
Good work.
Well, the $5 million that you're talking about there went into a super PAC that is helping Stratton attack her opponents on the airwaves through commercials. I mean, $5 million is a big deal. I mean, she was in that race. Krishnamoorthy is the big fundraising leader. Mm-hmm. He's got the most money to play with, the most ability to go both in terms of broadcast commercials, digital commercials, mailers, what have you. And so this is helping make up, you know, some of that distance. I think that, you know, the problem that Stratton faces is that she has basically been operating in the shadows of Governor Pritzker as lieutenant governor. It's sort of a low-profile statewide office where people traditionally have a hard time setting themselves
apart.
That's right. And just very quickly, I mean, you know, you can go back in history here, and there's like, you know, the last time I think that we had a lieutenant governor move on eventually to become a U.S. senator was Paul Simon. Mm. But there have been others along the way that didn't make the cut because people didn't know who they were.
Right. And speaking of setting herself apart, I mean, how is Stratton setting herself apart from Krishnamoorthy and Kelly, right? They're the front runners here, but they're all painting themselves as progressive. So how do you do that? How do you separate yourself?
Well, that is true. I mean, they're all three of these U.S. Senate candidates, the front runners anyway, are you know, they're all in the camp against Donald Trump. Clearly, they're trying to be the anti-Trump candidate,
right,
and carry on what Dick Durbin has been doing in the Senate for since Trump regained office, but. You know, Stratton is running in, as I mentioned, she's sort of running in the arms of J.B. Pritzker here, where, you know, running on his record. I mean, pretty much any kind of correspondence we see out of the governor's office also includes a quote or two from Juliana Stratton. So there's a coordinated effort on both, you know, both Stratton and Pritzker's part to elevate her over the others.
Are you keeping an eye on these, Claire?
Well, that's been interesting, too. They're all progressive candidates. You know, they're all sort of preaching anti-Trump. And then we're getting into the nitty-gritty. There's been so much finger-pointing, especially about money. A lot of those PAC dollars, you know, this is this is dark money. Well, that's dark money.
Oh, that's
money.
Right, yeah.
You know, some connection to a Trump donor.
Exactly, yeah. which Krishna Murthy was under the microscope. But I think what's interesting as an Illinoisan, as a Chicagoan born and bred, I mean, Dick Durbin's tenure, those are impressively big shoes to fill. And he's, you know, helped to sort of shape the Illinois that we're being governed by here today. But that Illinois is kind of changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dick Durbin, he's a white man. He's done a great job. But these top three leading candidates, there's no white men in the room, which I think is really interesting and a reflection, you know, of how progressive the state has really become.
Sticking with you, Claire, Cardinal Blaise Cupich is in the news. What is he saying about recent actions by our president?
He is calling for an apology, an official apology from the White House. This is after President Trump shared a pretty vile and racist video on Truth Social last week. This was on Friday. The video depicted President, former President and First Lady Barack and Michelle Obama as two primates in the jungle. So in a statement, Cupich is saying, quote, that nothing less than an unequivocal apology to the nation as well as to the persons demeaned is acceptable. The White House initially defended this post, we should say, too.
Said it was just a meme?
Yep. And it was later taken down following bipartisan backlash. So both sides of the aisle were not happy about that.
What do you think about that, Dave? Trump shares this racist meme and then refuses to apologize.
I think it's abhorrent. I don't think there's any other way to look at it. I mean, it's not you know, my standard with a lot of these things is if you're a parent, is this something you'd want your child to do? Mm-hmm. And I think universally we would say, no, we don't want our children to be not only talking that way and finger pointing that way, but we don't want them exposed to that. And that's the dilemma here. And, mm-hmm. You know, the White House can do what it wants. It can dig in and, you know, act as if there's no responsibility to be taken or accountability. But
right.
The fact is, it was a very offensive post, regardless of how you cut it. It was the one of the most racist things that I think I have ever seen coming out of the political arena.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a lot of this, right? These sort of statements or videos or things being posted and then maybe just quietly disappearing, but no official sort of rescindment.
A quick post-delete.
Exactly. No apology, at least not formally.
No apology. I mean, and that entire trope of looking at Black people as less than human or as apes, I mean, that's old. But to see that in 2026 and coming from the White House is just... it's appalling.
And we should say today that it's the 19th year since Barack Obama announced his candidacy for president.
Yes.
Today is the day that this happened in Springfield. I don't know if you were
Holy
there,
cow,
Dave.
I was there, and I had about five layers of clothing on,
yes,
and I think
yes.
The temperature that day was about 8 degrees.
I watched from Canada proudly, proudly. But I also, you know, speaking of Barack, I love the fact that folks responded by just a little, you know, a little bit of counter posts, right, on social media, right? A lot of positive and just loving photos of Barack and Michelle. And I joined in. I couldn't help it. I jumped in because, you know, folks were saying, this is the way we want to remember our former president and first lady. So shout out to folks who just jumped right in to sort of erase that horrible, horrible picture.
And noting that the Obama's names are nowhere near the Epstein files.
Exactly.
I haven't seen that either.
Yeah. So from Cardinal Cupich, Claire, to Pope Leo, the Vatican has approved the beatification of a televangelist with
yes.
local ties.
Yes, this is Archbishop Fulton Sheen, who is a popular U.S. radio and TV preacher. His path, though, to sainthood faced delays due to a court battle over his remains and concerns about his handling of clergy sexual misconduct cases. So this is the Peoria, Illinois diocese announced just yesterday that the ceremony can now proceed in Peoria, Illinois. So we'll downstate sainthood potentially, though no new date has been set yet. Sheen died back in 1979.
Mm. Back to the elections here, Dave. Governor Pritzker is seeking a third term in the midst of all this. I mean, he would be the first Democrat to actually reach that milestone. Can you quickly tell us who the Republicans are who are running against him?
Well, yeah, there are four candidates
okay.
here. I mean, Darren Bailey, who we remember from the last go around from downstate,
sure
conservative
do.
Farmer. He's in the running again. Ted Dabrowski, he is the former president of a conservative research and commentary website known as Wirepoints. He's been aligned with the conservative Illinois Policy Institute. Rick Heidner is a video gambling mogul who has clashed at various times with the Pritzker administration. And then the last is James Mendrick, who is mm-hmm. the two-term sheriff out in DuPage County. I mean, it's a pretty you know, decent field of Republican candidates.
Do any of these guys have a chance?
Well, I mean, I look at a guy like Mendrick, you know, and I mean, I've been covering politics long enough where if you were a countywide officer in DuPage County and you were running for statewide office in the old days, you were a Republican, and it also meant that you had an in to win election in the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
That is not the case anymore. The Republican infrastructure in Illinois, compared to what it used to be under, you know, when we had 26 straight years of Republican governors, is nothing like that. And so these folks are all, I would describe, long shots. They you know, you've got an incumbent governor who has operated scandal-free. He's made his way through. You think about the crises he's had to navigate through.
Yeah.
He walks into office with a $16 billion pile of unpaid bills. He
made a name for himself nationally.
Deals with a pandemic. He now is dealing again with budgetary crises brought on by just this litany of funding cuts coming from the White House.
Right.
And so he's really kind of been on the fire constantly, but he's got a strong record to run on. And so these candidates on the Republican side need to find a way to find vulnerabilities there. And don't forget, J.B. Pritzker is a billionaire and spends hundreds of millions of dollars.
Just
don't go after his blackjack game.
Yes. Well, there was a great profile that ran in Mother Jones magazine that someone flagged to me yesterday, and it talked about Pritzker's love of jigsaw puzzling, and that there's an entity called Liberty Puzzles, and they make wooden puzzles.
I have one, actually. Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting detail.
Bring it into work.
It's up my dog, so you're going to have to deal with that.
No, that's perfectly fine. We love
Gloria. He's a gamesman. But, you know, I think for being a billionaire, he has this sort of everyman kind of quality, and in sort of the anti-Trump agenda.
Right.
I mean, he has been a poster child of this. I mean, talking about even just the folks running for Durbin seat, they're sort of mirroring that image as a means to success.
Well, what other stories are you watching, Claire?
Well, if you woke up this morning and you weren't sort of freezing yourself to death, it's because we're warming up. High near 45 today. National Weather Service says we're probably going to have about a week of snow, no snow, unless you're far west.
Ooh, hallelujah.
And then a few weeks from now, the 40s could be here to stay.
All right.
So if you're not going anywhere for spring break, maybe just stick around. Great Wolf Lodge.
Yeah.
Go up to the Dell.
I'll see you there.
See you at Polar Vortex.
There you go.
Dave, what should we know about, because we'll be, of course, at WBEZ in the Chicago Sun-Times, keeping a very close eye on this primary. What's our coverage going to look like? Do we have some handy guides
share? Oh, man. We have been working our tails off here to help arm voters with as much information as they can have going into the primary. There's going to be a set of candidate questionnaires where we allow the candidates to just lay out their positions on a variety of questions. Those will be going online in just a matter of days here on the 18th. And then we're going to have an online voter guide that comes up middle of the month at some point that we'll just give a better flavor of who these various candidates are. And again, we're talking about dozens of candidates on the ballot, so there's a lot to keep track of.
All right, and just a note, WBEZ's talk shows In the Loop and Say More. We're going to be bringing you everything that you need to know leading up to the primaries, from what races to pay attention to, deep dives on the issues that you told us matter to you, and even how and where to vote. Tune in on Tuesdays ahead of the March 17th primary. And we still want to hear from you. What is one issue that is driving your vote this midterm? Maybe it's healthcare, maybe it's immigration, inflation, or something else entirely. Let us know at our voicemail, 888-915-9945. That's 888-915-9945. We've been talking with WBEZ's Claire Lane and Dave McKinney. Thanks for listening to In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons. Join me here every weekday for in-depth coverage of Chicago news and culture. Let's talk again soon.